Hi. We're rolling along pretty fast with a lot of names. Some of you are new listeners and not familiar with the names, the countries, and the places, but you can get a general overview. I tell people that if they're listening for the first or second or third time that if you pick up your newspaper and you read about Mr. Meese or Ronald Reagan's cabinet or Caspar Weinberger and these various people, they don't go into their background every single day. They have their names, and if you're interested, you have to go to the library or magazines and look up their background. They don't fill you in. They just tell you what they're doing that day, and that's all they can do. Now, one of the similarities to Lenin's murder and the Kennedy and the other assassinations is the dependence upon the psychiatric profile to nab this alleged assassin and say he was a loner or crazy. And last week in the same Chicago Tribune article I mentioned, there was this Four Faces of Lenin Killer. There was a quotation of psychiatrists trying to analyze this Mark David Chapman, not where he went, not the places he traveled that I mentioned before, but just this crazy guy standing in front of the Dakota Apartments. And one of the psychiatrists was Dr. Robert Marvitt of Honolulu, and the other was Dr. Stuart Berger, a former professor of legal psychiatry at Harvard. And what they claimed was that one of the most important, this quote's one of the most important hints of his state of mind was Chapman signing the logbook, John Lennon, that they thought he probably, they clarified with probably, identified with Lennon, and he may have had an identity crisis. They're now using the word alleged or probably or may have. They can't say it positively. But the psychiatrist had a headline article, the most important hint in the clue of the murder, why he did this motiveless crime, was he signed the logbook. Well, what happened to the logbook? Immediately after John Lennon was murdered, the news media, the New York Post, and New York Daily News, and all the newspapers had a picture of the signature, John Lennon, the one written October 23rd. And the man who manages the apartment, Joe Bustamante, had the press conference to show the identity crisis of him signing John Lennon. But when the police went 2 days later to pick up the log, they didn't take it right away and photograph it in the police department. The log was missing. So the most important piece of evidence that they were hinging on is gone. Why is it gone? Well, this fellow who managed the apartment said he didn't think it was important. But why didn't the police go after it that moment? Maybe it doesn't have his fingerprints on it. It reminds me of Lee Harvey Oswald's diary. It was produced in April of 1964, and Gerald Ford took the story of the diary to Henry Luce, and he put it on the cover of Time. And it was the most single important thing to show the mental state of Lee Harvey Oswald, that he was suicidal, like this Chapman, where it actually wasn't true. And they were going to hinge on his own writings to show how muddled he was. And it turned out that the original copy of the diary has never been seen to this day. It's 17 years later. And the original wouldn't have Lee Harvey Oswald's fingerprints. It wouldn't be linked to him. There's no reason to believe he wrote it. So that this log that they were depending upon to show his head is gone. And goodness knows if it was thrown in the ocean or burned or destroyed. But the picture of the ominous signature was mailed to me from New York, friends who subscribed to the tape in New York. And you see the handwriting there, and that was the big cover story. And then another friend up in the Bay Area called me immediately to say the San Jose News this last week, Friday, December 19th, had the story of the missing log, and it was also on the 11 o'clock television, but it hasn't been in any other newspaper this entire week. I take 10 a day, and I haven't seen any trace of it. Now, one of the clues, as I say, to his personality must be sought in the art galleries. There was some quotations this week about his having a yen for art galleries, that he liked to collect art. One article from Chicago again said he developed an obsessive interest in art, and he changed his job so he could be near the art gallery. And Newsweek tells about his collecting, borrowing money from his mother and his wife's family and buying these prints. And by late 1979, he was calling Pat Carlson, a saleswoman at the Waikiki Gallery, three times a week and talking to her hour by hour. And he quit his job at Castle Hospital and took lower pay to be a security guard where he could be nearer the local art galleries. Another similarity in all of these studies is that people like Emily and William Harris of the SLA or Charles Watson of the Manson family and various people take lower pay to be near the scene of the crime. Lee Harvey Oswald, who was trained in radar, electronics, language skills, allegedly moving boxes around some old book building at Dealey Plaza at the time. Kennedy's coming through town. People with multi-skills who could be working elsewhere take jobs to be near their control agents or they're on assignment. So when I read about his calling three times a week to go to the art gallery and having money not only to travel all over the world to these countries, but to be in contact hourly, frequently with the art gallery, I got out the articles of sworn testimony of Robert Byron Watson. This was reprinted in a paper, the Hudson Valley Chronicle, in 1977. And in November 6, 1977, I did a tape. If you have that tape cassette, number 294, that goes way back 3 years now. I did a story of the art galleries, and these were the allegations of Watson. He came from Atlanta, Georgia, and he claimed that Larry McDonald of Marietta, Georgia, who's now head of the House of Representatives conservative bloc, the moral majority, the Christian, new Christian rightist group. Larry McDonald is a big official of the Birch Society, and he's closely associated with a Jerry Adams, Adams and Associates collection agency, otherwise known as the Great American Silver Company. And it also is the Magellan Art Galleries on Peachtree Road in Atlanta, Georgia, which is a front for the assassination teams, gun running, terrorism, and narcotic traffic. Funds for Congressman Larry McDonald come through the Magellan Art Gallery. And Watson signed some testimony that this syndicate owns this combine. They steal electronic equipment and components and send them around the world and get paid in gold bullion, and they're involved in Chile, Peru, Southeast Asia, Costa Rica, and so forth. There's narcotics traffic, gun running. But the assassination team, we're talking about killing Martin Luther King in March of 1968, a week before King was murdered. And he overheard this. He was working in the gallery. And one of the people he worked with is a Dr. Anthony Malik from Beirut, Lebanon, who works with the Arab terrorists who help fund the Black September group, the assassination teams, again, that have been terrorizing Europe and recently have been linked to Frank Turpel, George Kirkola, the CIA, and they're very active in Lebanon. In fact, their name was in the news recently in connections with links to Billy Carter and the Atlanta, Georgia connections. They laughed at, this is the testimony and affidavit he filed in 1977. They laughed about the assassination of Robert Kennedy. It was real genius to make the American people believe that he was a crazy misfit. And this is what they're trying to pass off now. They said Dr. Malik is part of the CIA and his associate is Dr. Habash, working for the CIA over in Beirut, Lebanon, linked to Robert Vesco and the assassination teams. Now, the art galleries in Atlanta, Georgia, are the center for cocaine, narcotic traffic. And in 1977, he linked Senator John Tower to these assassination teams. And recently, I did radio tapes and broadcasts of Tower being the brother-in-law. His wife's brother is Samuel Cummings in London, who works with the assassination teams and supplies weapons for Frank Turpel and George Kirkola. So the Tower's name, Atlanta, Georgia, and the area, DeKalb County, is where this Jesus freak, this person who turned against John Lennon in 1973-74, was going to school in this exact area of DeKalb County for 18 months. And then Mark David Chapman was sent to Beirut, Lebanon. And the art gallery group had their headquarters for assassination teams all over the world, but one of their big places was Beirut, Lebanon. So it would be perfectly logical in 1973 if they were getting ready. This is at the height of Watergate, and the Nixon administration is going to fall down. Ronald Reagan was the selected heir to the White House. I'd published that in 1972. So you had this team active in Georgia, active in DeKalb County, where Chapman was, active in Beirut, Lebanon, heavily financed. And also, they bragged about their weapon training. They had affidavits that Byron Watson signed saying that they trained with guns, that they had places where they learned to shoot all over the country. And this is why I say that this Chapman fellow could have learned that military stance very easily here. In 1977, Watson wrote that Herman Ballard, alias Herman Jackson, told him about paramilitary arms. We have arms and munitions in every state. You can personally visit a hidden practice range and become familiar with the use of automatic weapons, machine guns, grenades, just in case commies or niggers get out of hand. So the art galleries were a place of meeting of assassination teams. And Watson wrote at the time that the syndicate visited these places and they took members out for lessons. They would blow somebody's head off and have them watch so they could illustrate how they better keep quiet or they'd get their own heads blown off. Byron Watson, Robert, went down to Chile then, visited with these people. He was doing narcotics traffic and then got caught and served time, and that's why he had these court affidavits. He claimed that they were locking him up because he and his mother had gone to the White House in 1970 to give all the information of who killed Martin Luther King and who set the framework for the murder of King and framing James Earl Ray. Watson was down in Chile where he met Don Carlos Morales in San Diego, Chile. His nephew is the head of the DINA, D-I-N-A, the Chilean Intelligence System. Morales is the second highest most official in the Nazi Chilean government. Watson wrote this in 1977. He's friendly with the highest officials of the CIA, including Richard Helms, the former director. And they're friendly with Walter Rauf. The U.S. Friendship with this Nazi colonel has continued since World War II, and he told how they killed Salvador Allende and put in Pinochet. Later, Jack Anderson has had articles about Operation Condor, the assassination teams coming out of Chile, and the people named by Watson, the Habash group out of Chile, and there's George Habash and a Fuad Habash. He passed away recently. The one brother passed away. The other one is in Beirut, Lebanon, and this Dr. Malik was a friend of Habash and brought this Watson fellow who wrote this article. I have about 30 letters from Watson about this. It came out, he was writing to me continuously from about 1965 to 1968. And then I never heard from him again, and I called another friend in New York this week to see if he heard about him, and he never heard from him again, so I don't know where he is. But just this year, October 22nd, 1980, Jack Anderson was writing about mercenaries, the CIA, Dr. George Habash, and their headquarters are in Beirut, Lebanon, and schools for terror. So I don't see any reason why we can't ask the question. It's not necessarily so, but ask the question, why, if Spiro Agnew, the Defense Department, the Operation Chaos, we're so against rock musicians and the rock culture. Why couldn't we assume or look for the chain of command of this person, Mark David Chapman, being sent to Beirut after 17 months in DeKalb County with these very people in this milieu of these people? Because it's these people that are the fundamentalists that have been linked to the assassination teams and Ronald Reagan. And that is one reason I felt so sure that I could say November the 2nd, just a month ago, that when Reagan comes in, it's going to be hard on the rock musicians. Everyone around him and the assassination teams, as I said before, has moved into place, and we have to follow these routes. Another link to Beirut, Lebanon, was an article that I mentioned on other tapes from the Washington Post this in December, The Mysterious Connections of John Ellsworth. Now, that's an agent that worked for the Secret Service, the FBI, Internal Revenue, Drug Enforcement, the CIA, the Organized Crime Strike Force in the Eastern District of New York. He was at Aldemont putting down the hippies and the rock musicians at the time of the stabbing of Meredith when that movie was made. I've talked about Helter Shelter, Give Me Helter Skelter, Give Me Shelter, the era of from the Beatles to Aldemont. Well, Ellsworth was very much involved with the filming of the movie Give Me Shelter. He worked for the federal agents. He was involved with narcotic traffic of the CIA in Beirut, Lebanon. All of that was published in the Washington Post. So the connections of the anti-rock group of the government agencies in Beirut is printed in the Washington Post just a year ago. And the patterns of this particular character come through there. Now, as far as the mind control, he had that glassy stare. He had that glazed look we've heard about in every one of these political assassinations. And yet no explanation of where he got that look or what places he went to. And as I say, there's missing years, the 6 months in Beirut, what he was doing at Lookout Mountain in Tennessee, the first wife, the woman in most of these cases is the control agent, and Hawaii is a center of mind control programs. The story of these apparent wackos doesn't hold up to the actual mental state of these people. The news media tells us they're depressed, they have unhappy love affairs, and so forth, and yet you find the wife arranging his trip through a travel agency around the world, the wife sending him money for the trips to New York, buying him the art gallery pictures. It couldn't have been too bad a marriage. And the women stay in the background. We don't have anything on the background of Mark David Chapman's wife. I got a letter in 1974, that's 6 years ago, from Ed Sanders. He wrote the book, The Family, about the Manson family. And he knew that I was interested in the mind control centers of the CIA, specifically in Hawaii, because Herbert Mullen in San Francisco had done some mass murders here in this state. And Mullen had was working at the Holiday Inn, and then he met a woman much older than him. And against his family's wishes, he flew to Hawaii, and he was committed the next day to a hospital controlled by the Army. And Lawrence Kwong, a fellow who shot into the window at KGO when Jim Dunbar was on the air, a few years ago, then walked down the street and commit suicide. He was taken to Hawaii by a woman and then brought back to San Francisco with mysterious gun put in his hand. He was supposed to be in a mental hospital, but the gun was unregistered and they didn't know where he got it. And he went to a private detective many, many times and said he's been programmed with electrodes and he's directed to this radio station. And he couldn't control himself, and the detective hardly knew what he was talking about and didn't want to believe it. So he went inside the office and shot Ben Munson, then went down the street and killed himself. But he was taken to Hawaii. Mullen was there, and there was even a hint that John Fraser was there. There wasn't any proof that he was. That was another California mass murder. But Mullen and Lawrence Kwong were taken there. So I got in touch with Ed Sanders, and he wrote to me, this was 6 years ago, and he said he would send me a resume of Herbert Mullen in Hawaii the summer of 19. This was early. This is way before these other stories were breaking. It was at the time of the mass murders in Santa Cruz, around 1973 or so. He said he's gotten many papers. Mullen was first institutionalized in Mendocino State Hospital in 1968 and 69. Well, someday I'll have to get a computer and put these through. Jim Jones was trained with mind control down in Brazil at Belo Horizonte with the CIA and then came up to Mendocino and had hospitals and training places. I'll have to overlap the years. It was 1960 when Jones was in Brazil and 73 when he got the property in Guyana. But he did have mental and physical facilities up in Mendocino in this time period, and Tim Stone was the head of the grand jury. He was a DA up there. Jim Jones was on the grand jury, and Tim Stone was part of the DA's office from Stanford. Mullen was institutionalized in Mendocino. He became a completely different person, and this, what I'm reading, are parts of documents and letters that Ed Sanders sent to me. He became a completely different person. He said you wouldn't even know who he was. And it was early 1970. He went to Hawaii with a woman named Patricia Brown. She said that she had to take him to Hawaii. And there was part of a Christian community, a church group, that they stayed in, according to Ed Sanders. And the minute he got into Hawaii, he was put in the hospital the next day. The family didn't trust her, but they said it was some kind of a religious thing, a convent or something there, and they picked him up, and he was plunked into this place in psychiatric treatment over on the island. He has thousands of documents on the Mullen case, and I never have gotten a hold of those. Sanders is back east, and I haven't been able to get a hold of them. But he mentioned the taking of these people to the Hawaiian Islands for this mind control kind of thing. He names the hospitals in Hawaii and the company of a woman. The most famous or most outrageous case of a woman is Leonard Keeley, K-I-L-L-E, that I've talked about on tapes before. Her husband, the wife of Leonard, committed him to a hospital in Boston for the purpose of experimenting and implanting electrodes on an imaginative normal brain. He was the original inventor of the land camera. They took his invention away from him, and it became known as the great Polaroid land camera. They reduced him practically to an animal status where he couldn't think or talk. And when he sued the federal government and the doctors for implanting these electrodes, even in his court hearings a couple of years ago, they had to put waste baskets over his head because the electrodes were so strong in the room. They can't remove them. They're still implanted. But his wife delivered him to this psychosurgery and then married the man that she was living with before they put him in the hospital. So there is a lot of information about Mullen that Ed Sanders have. I do have one letter he sent me from the state of Hawaii, Department of Health, Maui Mental Health Service, 121 Mahalani Street, dated June 26, 1973. And this is just the time that Mark David Chapman was graduating from high school and staying in an area that was very much involved with counterintelligence, experimentation, and assassination teams. Mr. Mullen was treated here as an outpatient from June 26, 1970 to July 10th. He reported he arrived in Maui June the 25th and sought voluntary admission the following day and was put in a psychotherapy group with the health clinic. And this is a report about his arriving and being given LSD and other drugs. And he had a desire, according to the state of Hawaii, to spread nonviolence. And they started administering Thorazine and Stelazine to him. His desire in the medical report or signed by the clinical psychologist was for nonviolence. And it tells about his being admitted into the place and later administering other drugs. I do have one area of research that was sent directly from Hawaii to Ed Sanders, and the chronology is interesting. The way the family didn't want him to go, he went, and the next day he was slapped into a hospital. That's why I say the chronology of Chapman going to Hawaii, we don't know who met him there. He had a wife. We don't know anything about her, whether she worked with the CIA, whether she was like Leonard Keeley's wife, whether she's like the woman that said, this poor Mullen over to Hawaii, or the woman that was with Lawrence Kwong. The pattern, the similarity runs through all of these various conspiracies, and all you have to do is change the name and the dates, and you find that the modus operandi remains the same. In 1973, there was an article here in California, mental hospitals versus patients who are doing killing, and it says 74 people have been killed in California the last couple of years by patients. Edmund Kemper, 8. Mr. Mullen, 10 or more. Juan Corona, 25. Oda case, John Frazier charged with 5. The Manson family, 5 deaths. In Houston, Texas, there was a ring of homosexuals and deaths. Bodies being shipped to California, 27. Now we have the Stranglers, the Freeway Killers, DeSavio, the Boston Strangler, Jim Jones, David Berkowitz. The common denominator with all of these mass murders, there may be more mass murders, but the common denominator is that they all had links to the federal government, to the local police department. I do want to do one whole evening on the Strangler in Los Angeles, the links to the CIA, the FBI, and the local police department. Well, what is the motive behind all of this? We don't have time tonight to go into the motive or the modus operandi of mind control. But there is a reason for it. There is a good reason. It's documented. If I told you, you wouldn't believe it. If I read it to you, it sounds impossible. In the long run, the purpose to erase memories and to make people not responsible for their behavior is that the Earth, in essence, is overpopulated and that the NASA space agencies, along with people from Nazi Germany who came to this country, designed a way to eliminate people. But in order to eliminate them, you have to control their minds to accept this process, and you have to create certain patsies to wipe out those political leaders who would be opposed to this kind of genocide. I have a book called The Domesday Dictionary, taken after the Doomsday Dictionary, written by three psychologists and social workers that came out in 1963. And they talk about manned space stations that I'll go into later. They talk about siphoning the world population out and the people working on the space stations right now. Talk about the necessity to genetically mutate and alter minds in order to make this feasible. If there's only a limited amount of the Earth's resources and there's too many people to bother to educate or house or employ, if robots will do it, there has to be an alternative way to handle it. I've quoted on the air many times the quotations of Dr. Jose Delgado, who works with these assassination teams very, very closely and with Ronald Reagan's team and the far right. And the direct quote in general, I just give you an idea of what it is. He says, man does not have the right to have the power of his own mind. Delgado has perfected the electrode implants and so forth because he doesn't believe in today's society that you know what is good for mankind, that there has to be an alternate way, whether they insert transponders into you or whatever, to control you. Now, there's some people that don't agree with Dr. Delgado. I don't think John Kennedy would agree. I don't think Malcolm X would agree. I don't think Martin Luther King would agree or Robert Kennedy would agree. I don't think John Lennon would agree. And I don't think there are very, very many people left who care that much about society, who have the guts to stand up and point their finger at these people and accuse them of altering our life to become mechanical. John Lennon was one of these people who illustrated that their way was wrong and give peace a chance. Wars eliminate population. They also increase weapon systems. The chapter on Mark David Chapman is far from closed. More people are instantly working on this than they did a John Kennedy case or the other assassinations. A lot of people are angry. I appreciate your calls during the week. I'm getting flooded with letters. People are hurt. They're concerned. And maybe this is what they needed to shake them out of a certain lethargy and realize that it's out there. These assassination teams are perfected. They work. They got their cover story going. So if they can put it over on us one more time, they'll try it. And it's up to us to say, we've had enough. And if you've had enough, just keep listening to KLRB, and we'll try to show the patterns of these crooks, thieves, and murderers as we go along. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California, and you take care till next week.
There are places I remember. Affection for people and things.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.